Hi, this is Steve Nerlich.
Why cheap astronomy?
Yeah, why? And this is Dear Cheap Astronomy, episode 120, Different Perspectives. Looking at things from different perspectives, or angles, or by different methods, is often the best way to confirm that what you are observing is really correct, and looking at something from lots of different angles is often the best way to understand what that something is. For example, Dear Cheap Astronomy, have we got any spacecraft on the other side of the Sun? Well, yes and no. Nearly all our spacecraft orbit the Sun, since they are either orbiting Earth or another planet, or are touring the asteroid belt, and hence they've all been around the back of the Sun at one time or another. The only spacecraft we have that don't orbit the Sun are the ones that are on their way out of the solar system, being the Pioneers, the Voyagers, and New Horizons, which have sufficient escape velocities to leave solar orbit. And while we're on the subject, remember Elon Musk's car? People often ask if it's got to Mars yet, to which the answer is no, but it has overtaken Mars more than once. Since it left Earth several years ago, and left already possessing Earth's solar orbital velocity, it has been round the Sun several times now. When you live in the solar system, going around the Sun isn't that big a deal. And as for getting excited about observing the other side of the Sun, since it rotates every 27 days, we get to see its other side on a very regular basis. But okay, with all that nitpicking done, there is some genuine scientific value in being able to monitor the far side of the Sun before it revolves around to face Earth. It's all about space weather forecasting, which from Earth's point of view just means how space may be influencing our planet at any point in time, and most of the influence from space is solar wind, solar flares, and solar coronal mass ejections, all of which send high-energy charged particles our way. Those particles have the potential to cause anything from radio blackouts to power grid blackouts. They could also burn out electronics on board spacecraft and satellites. The general idea is that since sunspot activity correlates with increased solar flares and coronal mass ejections, if we see active sunspots on the surface of the Sun in advance of that surface turning to face Earth, then we'd have some extra warning about potentially disruptive space weather coming our way. And while we're on the subject, when we say the Sun rotates every 27 days, that's an average measure. Much like the gas giant planets, different parts of the Sun rotate at different rates. So, for example, material around the solar equator rotates every 25 days, while up near the poles, material rotates every 35 days. Also, for your interest, the Earth's orbital plane is tilted by about 7% relative to the Sun's equator, so that we see a bit more of the Sun's north pole around September and more of its south pole around March. But anyway, there are some issues to think through in trying to observe the Sun from the other side of Earth's orbit. If you are trying to do station keeping, that is to keep a spacecraft in the same relative position to Earth as Earth is moving in its orbit, then you have to keep burning fuel to counter various gravitational perturbations, such as when Venus passes by. To minimize the fuel cost, what you could do is position a sun-observing spacecraft at Lagrange Point 3, which is directly opposite the Earth on the other side of the Sun. A spacecraft at Lagrange Point 3 could complement the sun-observing spacecraft we currently have at Lagrange Point 1, which is on Earth's side of the Sun, lying between the Earth and the Sun. However, from Lagrange Point 3, you can't readily communicate back to Earth because the Sun is in the way. So you could put relay spacecraft at Lagrange Point 4 or Lagrange Point 5, either of which have line of sight of both Earth and Lagrange point 3. We got close to something like this with NASA's STEREO spacecraft, which were two virtually identical spacecraft, both of which departed from Earth's orbit around the Sun and then looped back into it such that one was ahead of Earth in its orbit and the other one behind. Due to the various gravitational perturbations we discussed earlier, they both then began to drift further apart. At one time they were about 90 degrees apart, and in early 2011 they were both exactly 180 degrees apart, and were then able to jointly provide a complete 360 degree view of the Sun, even though they then began drifting again, and a few years ago the STEREO B spacecraft became non-operational, and that was that. So, can we observe the far side of the Sun? Sure. Arguably, we do it all the time. But putting the pedantics to one side, yes, it's possible we could observe the Sun from the opposite side of Earth's orbit, at the same time we're observing the Sun from Earth's side of the orbit. And not only is it possible, it has been done. And if we want to do it again, we kind of like the cheap astronomy Lagrange point solution, if only so we can do even more podcasts on Lagrange points, because you can never have enough podcasts on Lagrange points.
This is the middle bit.
Investigating the Sun from all angles has highlighted opportunities for space weather forecasting, where we might be able to see sunspots and flares on the face of the Sun ahead of it actually turning to face us. But now, looking even wider than that, is there a way of looking at the whole universe from different angles? And of course, there is. Dear Cheap Astronomy, what is the Hubble crisis? Well, apparently there is a crisis in cosmology, although in most respects, that is just business as usual. There aren't many scientists who are overwhelmed by existential angst when they suddenly realise they don't know everything. The Hubble crisis first started being talked about around 2014, as it became apparent there was a consistent discrepancy in measurements of the Hubble constant, which is a measurement of how fast the universe is expanding. What's sometimes called the late time method involves measuring relative distance markers. For example, standard candles like Type 1a supernovae, which always explode with the same intrinsic brightness, which means a bright one must be closer than a dim one. Using such a standard candle as a distance measure, and then using its redshift to tell you how fast it's expanding away from you, you can then calculate the universe's current expansion rate, which works out to be about 73 kilometers per second per megaparsec, where a megaparsec is about 3.3 million light years. But you can also do what's called the early time method, where the cosmic microwave background reflects the temperature of the early universe, and tiny fluctuations in the cosmic microwave background reflect the initial conditions of the early universe, for example, how much radiation versus how many hadrons. And on the basis of all that, you can then calculate how the universe must have unfolded over the next 13.8 billion years, which will then tell you how fast it should be expanding now. And if you calculate the Hubble constant in this way, you get 67 kilometers per second per megaparsec. The late standard candle measure of 73 and the early cosmic microwave background measure of 67 have defined error bars, but even accounting for those, the two measures just don't overlap. So, that's the Hubble crisis, or the Hubble tension, as many refer to it these days. Essentially, the early cosmic microwave background estimate is what you should expect to get if our standard model of the universe is right, and the late standard candle measure is what you actually get. So, one explanation for the discrepancy is that our standard model of the universe is wrong, or at least a bit wrong. The idea that this sent shudders through the astronomical community is just journalistic fabrication. It's unlikely that anyone in the astronomical community sees the standard model to be anything more than sort of right. After all, the whole idea of a working model is that you expect to keep making tweaks and adjustments to it as you go forward. Another possible explanation for the discrepancy in Hubble measures is that the methodologies by which we calculate those early and late measures may not be quite right. After all, it is more than likely that in another 100 years, technological development should be delivering us more accurate figures, and in that process we're likely to also refine some of the assumptions that underlie those calculations. There's a whole string of assumptions that underlie the distance ladder by which we determine how far away distant things really are, and there's another whole string of assumptions whereby we determine how the modern universe has unfolded since the cosmic microwave background was first released. So, that could be all it is. We just need to tighten up both the early and late measures until they come together. After all, 67, 73, they're only out by 3 units each way. As ballpark measures go, it's not that bad. However, most of the astronomical community are not keen on that view, since there has been an awful lot of work done by lots of independent observatories and by lots of independent theoreticians, trialing new technologies and trialing new assumptions, and everyone checks each other's work as they go. And despite all that, everyone keeps landing at about the same places. Early measures 67, late measures 73. Presumably there will be some resolution to the current tension at some future point in time, and probably about that same time, a whole new crisis will arise. That is the nature of science, as much as it is the science of nature.
This is the end bit.
So, there you go. Looking at the universe in different ways has shown us that we don't understand it as well as we thought we did, although since we keep saying we only understand 5% of it anyway, we aren't really saying all that much. But that's it for another episode of Dear Cheap Astronomy. If you've got a space science question, or you just want to take the road less travelled, why not write to cheapastro@gmail.com and we'll make all the difference. Thanks for listening. Steve Nerlich, Cheap Astronomy.